Hey, there we go. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today we are honored to have Chris Birch from Modiphius Entertainment join us. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, guys.
Yeah, well, welcome to America. I understand you're in the States for a few days.
Yeah, actually for 3 weeks. I'm over here for the, we just did the Gamma Trade Show, which is a big trade. So all the distributors and retailers come together. And then I've got Adepticon at the end of the month, a big miniature show, and then a whole bunch of meetings in between because it wasn't worth coming home.
Well, I hope you get to enjoy yourself a little bit. Sounds like you have a lot of work going on.
Yeah, no, we're having a few beers here and there. Don't worry.
So is that some hotel room that you sat in at the moment in time?
It is, yeah. I'm in Washington for a mysterious meeting. Not with the White House.
Well, now I think it is with the White House, but okay. And our co-host today is John Gibbons, who's done a lot of work for us at Fanning Goat Press. And if you ever saw the Extreme Earth setting for Savage Worlds, that was John. Hey, John.
Hi, guys. You all right?
Doing all right. So, Chris, the big news in post-apocalyptic gaming the last couple of weeks, you guys are going to release a Fallout RPG.
Yeah, we are. It's been a bit insane, actually. We've had, like, national press in the UK and all the big video games websites and of course all the tabletop sites. So it's obviously hit a lot of people.
There must be some insane pressure to get it right.
Oh yeah, of course there is. I mean, the great thing is we've got the Wasteland Warfare miniatures game already out there. So it was a bit of if you know the game, every card has got RPG stats on it already. So, I mean, even right now, I could crack open the box and pretty much play an RPG with it if you wanted to. So it was a short hop to doing an actual full-blown expansion for that game that, you know, fills in all the gaps. And then next year, we're doing the, you know, the 2D20 version, which is obviously a bit more extensive. Goes into a lot more detail of character creation and development, whereas this one for the miniatures game is obviously more tactical based. So gives us means we can hit two different groups of people.
So when you applied obviously for the license for the game,
yeah,
you have to apply for the license twice, or once you've got the license itself, have you got free reign to create any kind of game with it?
No, you do. You have what's called categories. So typically you pitch for a license to make miniatures games.
Yeah.
Or board games or RPGs and card games, for example. So it just happens that our license covered a number of categories because we've been talking about different projects with them. And Fallout RPG wasn't on that list at the beginning, but because we had it in the license, we were able to just include it once we convinced them that it was a great idea and we would make it as easy as possible for them to be able to approve it. I mean, they've said no, you know, for years and years and years and years. And I think because the miniatures have been so well received with the team there, I mean, we literally get virtually no comments on every miniature that goes in. I mean, they absolutely love them, and it shows the ridiculously hard work the miniature team put into it. So doing a really good job for a licensee does open doors, and if you bend over backwards to make them some really, really beautiful product, they will trust you with other projects.
Yeah, because, I mean, there must have been... hundreds of people supplied to them for the license. I would have fought for that setting.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they've just said no year after year after year, and of course, once you're in the door and you're making great products, and you can show that it's possible. Often, what video games companies are worried about is the sheer amount of approvals. So, you know, we all know an RPG, a classic RPG book, is 200 to 400 pages, right? That is a lot of material that they've got to approve, and they're worried about getting painted into a corner that they can't do something in the future because someone says, "Ah, but you said this in the role-playing game, so you can't do that, or you've broken your own canon." And they don't want fans pointing to something that some writer made up in an RPG as, you know, as evidence. So It is a tricky one. So the great thing is with the expansion for the war game is we don't need hundreds of pages of setting material, because if you don't know, sorry, you've got, there's obviously a fire going on, you can hear all the sirens. if you, well, they found me in the hotel, God, damn it. So if you don't know the world of Fallout, then you're probably not playing the miniatures game.
Yeah.
So we don't need to put loads of content in. We're doing a few pages on each faction to go, you know, why would you play the super mutants? Because they're, you know, really good at close combat, and this is what they are and who they are, where they're from. So why would you want to play a super mutant character? And also generally as a group, you know, what makes them interesting in the miniatures game, like tactics and things like that. So we don't need to put in hundreds of pages of background material, and that's making the first expansion much easier to get out. And it gives us the whole of this year to slowly work with them on the more extensive material that will be in the 2D20 edition, and, you know, and all the adventures and things like that. So it's a sort of staged release of, you know, an RPG product. So we've made it as easy as possible. The other thing is the rules. It's not like, oh, here's another 200 pages of rules you need to approve, because we are effectively using the same rule system as Wasteland Warfare, but with some expansion rules. So, but it's all based on the same system. So it's not, there's nothing in there that someone's going to go, wait a minute, we're going to have to play this properly before we can even say yes or no.
So when you go to the 2D20 system next year, is that when you're going to be looking at the role play elements of the system more, like the areas to explore and
Well, I mean, in a funny way, you could take the Fallout Wasteland Warfare version. It's kind of, it is designed for heavy tactical combat, but yeah. You could do the combat in your mind's eye. You could do it like any other RPG. You don't have to use it at all. We just, you know, when we stat out adventures, we're going to face about one in every three scenes on a, here's a map of a town, and there's a vault entrance here, and set up the, you know, the various characters here and here. But when you're going into town just to meet someone to talk, you don't need to set up miniatures. You still play in the mind's eye there.
Yeah,
just that it's going to be, because it's using the miniature system, it's well, in some way it's a lot simpler in terms of character creation and advancement. Whereas the 2D20 one can go into a lot more detail about skills and perks and abilities. And so we don't have so much restrictions because it's not tied to the miniatures game.
But when you did a 2D20, is that going to be kind of like the physical books going to be laid out more like a standard role-playing game?
Oh, yeah.
So you'll have like the sort of gazetteer, you'll have like the location settings and things. So how have you... Because obviously, has it been too easy to sort of look at what the video game had and then convert those locations, or you're doing your own locations separate to what was in the games?
So we're using everything from the game world. So we're starting with Fallout 4 as the backdrop, and then there'll probably be some wider information on the main factions around the universe and the kind of wider, you know, US map. What we're not doing is going in and going, and here's a new vault called Number X in different location on the Fallout 4 map. So we're not creating new content, because there's so much content there already. There's loads of abandoned vaults and cool old factories and weird stuff going on. What we can do, we can also create adventures which you can set anywhere. So we don't want to necessarily create a prescribed adventure. This mission must happen in this valley and this factory of the Fallout 4 area. You know, we can do there's this old Vault-Tec facility. You can place it anywhere in the wasteland that you're running your campaign, because some people might want to run it in Vegas, some people might want to run it on the East Coast or the West Coast. So we want to keep it pretty sort of neutral, so that you can place those missions and adventures anywhere you want.
Cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's been so many, they've fleshed out that universe so much over the years. I'm guessing the system Bible they sent you came in, you know, just a huge, big monolithic binder that, you know, landed with a thud on your desk.
You'd be surprised. I think There's so much content in the games that a lot of it is in their, you know, it's with their team. And I think a lot of them refer, you know, they refer to the online wikis and things like that as one place that tends to keep all the information. It's not necessarily 100% correct. So, you know, what we have to do is go out there. You know, we work with people who are super fans and writers who know the material inside out. And we have to be very careful that we're not creating stuff that might paint them into a corner, that we're using existing material. And there are so many great quests and stories that it's quite easy to expand it into a mission based on their story. So
I suppose with the recent Star Trek game that you've just done, which is probably mission-based, I suppose you've learned a lot from doing missions based on from that game when you move into Fallout?
Well, it's funny. With Star Trek, they're super pro you creating content. So we created the Shackleton Expanse, the whole new area of space. We have created races, we've created new ships, we've created new gear, all kinds of stuff. They very much embrace beta content creation. So if you know that, you know, alpha content, alpha is anything that's in the movies and the TV shows, and then beta is kind of stuff that's in video games, novels, comic books, role-playing games. So it's not 100% official. So our Shackleton Expanse won't be in the TV series, for example. So it gives them the ability to let licensees be very creative without, you know, causing any conflict of canon.
Sort of like the Star Wars Expanded Universe kind of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. Because it's you just cannot keep track of all of that and maintain, you know, writing teams need to be able to get on and create stuff. And of course, you know, writing teams are always super fans, so they tend to know more than anyone does about the universe. But the TV show writers cannot be constricted by, well, wait a minute, we can't say that about the Enterprise because in the comic issue 37, they've blown it up, you know. So it's, you know, they need to be able to get on and do their thing. So
yeah, I saw a funny panel, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was like the 20th anniversary, and they started asking the cast members questions about the comic. And they stopped there like, there's a comic? What the hell? We didn't know about this.
Not right, yeah.
So kind of a thing. We were talking to John before the show. We were trying to categorize the different sorts of RPG universe post-apocalyptic settings. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to us there's pretty much zombie settings and non-zombie settings.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I grew up on things like Metamorphosis Alpha by James Ward and, you know, the wonderful Gamma World, which was that kind of Dungeons and Dragons in the future with wacky talking badgers and vicious plants and security key cards that got you access to everywhere. And
yeah, it's funny because I was because when I first started role playing, it was always things like Aftermath and
Twilight 2000. Very crunchy, realistic. Yeah,
I mean, we used to play Aftermath till it was done to death, but with Aftermath, it was really kind of like that hardcore World War III sort of military aspect. Same with Twilight 2000, the way I was always put off on Gamma World. I never really enjoyed Gamma World, I thought it was a bit too funny and too. Where a post-apocalyptic feel was, you wanted it to be a bit more gritty and grimy, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, because Twilight 2000 was basically the bombs had gone off, you know, Europe and its big war, but remnants of the army were all trying to make their way home to America, weren't they? So it was quite interesting and quite grim, dark.
And deadly combat. I mean, you got shot in that, and you, like, you know, your leg could get blown off, and that was you finished. You know?
Funny way, Metamorphosis Alpha was equally dead. Right. James Ward is legendary for writing the most ridiculously deadly RPG missions, where, you know, you should expect to be dissolved, disintegrated, or, you know, chopped in half. And I come from that school of, I mean, my first Dungeons and Dragons game, In Search of the Unknown, I was playing with my brother and his girlfriend, and they I got given a suit of plate armor as an 8 year old first, you know, first level character, which I should have been suspicious of. And of course, in Search of the Unknown, there's a big pit trap at the end of the first corridor, and we had this fight with the goblins there, and then I fell through the pit trap, and they tried to save me. You know, it was like, okay, make the save roll to hang on to the edge. No, failed. Okay, you fall into the lake. Make the save roll to get the armor off. Failed. and that was it. I was dead. So, but then I loved my character ever from that moment on, the next character. And I cared about his existence like no other. And I really believe in, you know, character death and, you know, the risk of death to characters. And that's why deadly post-apocalyptic games are great fun, I think, because you can you just carry on with another character, and you should die in ridiculous ways. Like Paranoia, you know, is hilarious. How you, which is also a post-apocalyptic game.
Isn't it, actually? Yeah, you think about it. Yeah, very much so. Well, that was crap. I played quite a few sessions of Paranoia back in the day, and that was absolutely ridiculous game sessions. You know?
Yeah, we just played the new one. Recently, and I mean, it is, yeah, because it's that dystopian, bizarre future where anything goes, and it's absolutely hilarious. So,
yeah, it always kind of had aspects of Logan's Run to me, Paranoia. Yeah, the vibe to it, you know what I mean? It's just a bit strange, you know, strange societies.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I suppose there is the grim, dark, serious post-apocalypse. You've got the sort of fantasy post-apocalypse, like the Gamma Worlds, Metamorphosis Alpha. Goodman Games is Mutant. I'm trying to remember the full name, but they do a kind of Gamma World with numbers rubbed off that does very well. And then, you know, you've got Fallout, which kind of also has that. It's a bit of both. It is got that humorous side to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But it also is, you know, it's got some sort of dark overtones.
And well, then, see, with Fallout, I mean, it's like, for example, I always enjoyed Fallout 3, which was my favourite. And then I wasn't keen on New Vegas because I thought that was a little bit too quirky, like the Elvises and things like that. I was never really into that. You know, I preferred it a bit more darker than, you know, the one before it.
Yeah. And then there are also post-apocalyptic stories where you are involved in the rebuild, you know, where you know, the dial starts much further along the clock and, you know, the grim dark happened. You've now got a chance to sort of restart things. I mean, there's things like Mutant Year Zero where you're trying to save the Ark. It is also quite tough, but there's very much a sense of hope and you're looking, you know, you're looking for the solution and you're involved in the evolution of your community. You know, you can even get as far as building railways and radio stations and stuff. So I think it's interesting. It's one of those things that never goes away. There's all sorts of versions which are zombie apocalyptic stories, from very dark to wacky action adventure.
Yeah, from Walking Dead to Zombie Land.
Yeah, Zombie Land, amazing.
Zombieland, and this new one's out next year, I think, isn't it? Zombieland 2.
Yeah, they only took like 15 years to make that, so it's
Zombieland.
Speaking of release dates, do we have months yet on the RPG coming out, or is that just sometime in 2019, 2020?
No, a lot of it does obviously depend on Bethesda's approvals, but all being good, we should be at Gen Con with a big, big stack of books. And then it'll be in stores at the end of August. And then that's the book, which is the expansion for the base Fallout Wasteland Warfare game. Although you could just buy a set of dice and download the cards to go with it. Then we've got a box set coming for Christmas, which is aimed at people who don't really want to buy the base game. And it comes with the dice and cards inside. And then at some point in 2020 is the 2D20 version.
Okay,
TBD. Which is always a bit of a mouthful. So, and that obviously has got a lot more content, so it will depend on approvals. But it's why we've set it as 2D20 to give us plenty of time.
Okay, that's definitely look forward to that. And just going back to the previous that line of conversation, we're talking about more hopeful settings. John, the post-apocalyptic setting you're working on right now for Savage Worlds, the After, that's sort of set in that kind of time frame where the Grim Dark has happened, and now it's sort of a frontier rebuilding kind of situation.
Well, it is, yes. So the After is kind of set only less than a century after this world-breaking sort of apocalypse caused by alien invasion. So the survivors are people who've sort of managed to hide themselves away from the alien onslaught, and then the aliens have now gone, left the Earth to what it was, and now people now resurfacing and seeing what the world now brings and seeing what's changed in the world and seeing how it's altered by what the aliens have left behind and the wars that they've had in previously. So it is kind of like a frontier coming up, exploring the world and trying to make a new life for yourself. So it's a bit more, it's more like a hopeful sort of setting than, say, the old ones we're talking about, kind of like, say, Twilight 2000 or Aftermath. But I think the main difference of what we try to do with the After is, rather than going down, say, your typical mutant or your kind of like World War III and your nuclear Armageddon, you know, we've gone for this sort of strange alien invasion. So when you do sort of survive and come forth into the world, you've got these pockets of strange sort of alien artifacts still around to explore. You've got these dimensional sort of portals that have left the world in strange situations. So you can literally climb over a mountain and find a 2 mile area, which might be like Arctic waste from another world, etc. So it's given the GM lots of things to play with in a way. Lots of tropes to play with that you can mix. I mean, it's not like, say, Rifts, but it's very similar sort of feel to the fact you've got these portals and extra dimensional energies. But we decided to set it in Wyoming, so it's and the reason we chose that was because I literally wanted a setting which was in an area of America which was not densely populated. And when you type in least populated states in America, it comes up with places like, obviously, like Arizona. But I was a bit cautious about the fact that a lot of your post-apocalyptic settings tend to be set in these desert terrains. I didn't want a Mad Max feel. So Wyoming, which is obviously a beautiful part of the world, that's one of the least populated parts of America. So I thought, well, that's a great place to set it. So it already has that expanse of nature and feel about it as explorers. You're not going to bump into too much from the past anyway. So yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I got to through Wyoming last year, and it looks post-apocalyptic already in some spaces.
So. Like, yeah, bleak. Yeah. But on the same token, it's one thing I wanted to try and do was the fact that, you know, a lot of post-apocalyptic settings, it's always finding food, finding water, finding clean, unradiated food and water, but I didn't want that. You know, that's not the threat in the After. You know, you're in Wyoming, you're still going to have all the nature and the water and the animal life is still there. Some of it might be changed by the sort of the aliens, etc. But, you know, finding food and water is not a concern. It's exploring, trying to sort of build a community back together and discovering these strange sort of areas that have been left behind by the alien races that warred on Earth, basically, which have now gone. But, yeah, it's really different.
Okay. Yeah. There's a quick start. I'll put the link in the show notes up right now on RPG Now, and there's a Kickstarter coming for that in May. So
we've got a Facebook page. So if you go onto Facebook and click on the After, you should be able to find it. So we're sort of showing some sneak peek of artwork as we go along, and showing some things. So yeah, hopefully it should be good.
Okay. Yeah. And now a Fallout miniature game is available now, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. And looking forward to next year for the RPG box set. And that is about the time we have, since this is one of our quick, frantic, and fun, fast sort of Monday podcasts. So, Chris and John, appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
Chris, I hope you appreciate your time there in DC, and have fun doing whatever you're doing.
Okay.
All right. And we'll talk to you guys later. And thanks to our listeners for tuning into the Banff podcast.